Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Welcome to Southpaws, episode 439, All American Podcast.
Woohoo!
Woo!
USA!
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 This is now officially an All American Podcast.
That's very true.
It is no longer a two Americans and a Brit. Well, it still sort of is because I have dual citizenship, but. Anyway, long story short, I'm officially an American now.
Woo-hoo.
So,
welcome to the club.
Yeah. But it's important and good.
Yeah. So we should talk about that a little bit, right?
So, I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzz Wolf.
And I'm Shiva.
And we're back at Shiva's place, and Fuzz has a story to tell.
Yeah. So, this is a fun topic to talk about. Our first podcast in 3 weeks or so that all three of us have actually been on at the same time. Yeah, because we did, I did one with Fox and Pepper, and then you two did one week after that, and now we're all here. Monday, September 9th, was the date of my immigration oath, naturalization oath ceremony, which was the local government rented out the Plano Event Center, and they basically did us in groups of probably between 500 and 600. So there were 579 people in my group getting their citizenship that day, representing 80 different countries, which is a pretty amazing cross-section of the world. So we got there way too early. We eventually get let in. My husband, Tiran, and Saverin came with me. We were all dressed up very nicely. And, I went in and checked in, had to surrender my green card, give them my paperwork. And then we went into the auditorium and we had the ceremony. The family and friends were like all the way in the back. And like the first quite a few rows were full of us immigrants.
Well, the full 500 of you. I imagine quite a few.
How many rows did it look like it was from the back? Because I was like four rows from the front and I know it went a ways behind me,
think there was like 9 or 12 sections of at least 10 rows apiece, and there was like at least 20 chairs across per row.
Yeah. And it was in like three different sections across the room. But some of my favorite highlights were, part of it was that I forget what they call it, the calling of the countries or the naming of the countries, something like that. But anyway, they say one of the country names that's represented, and the people that are emigrating from that country stand up. Everybody claps. And as we stood up, I noticed it. We all kind of looked around to see like, who else, And as people at other countries were being called, I looked around and saw who was from where and whatnot. So they call United Kingdom towards the end because U is at the bottom. And I stood up and I saw at least two or three other Brits, at least from my angle, were there. It was super cool though. That was probably my favorite part. And the lady to my left was from Haiti, and the lady to my right was from Vietnam. So India clearly won the day. They called out India, and like a whole fucking row in front of me stood up, and like a bunch of people on my row and behind me. And Tiran and Saverin was like, "Yeah, India!" Like. Was the clear winner. But the other big one was Mexico, which makes sense considering we share a border with Mexico. So a lot of Mexicans becoming Americans that day. And that actually ties into a news story that I was listening to. It was on NPR, but it covers Texas. And they were saying that there's a report out that shows that Latinos are registering to vote in record numbers, and that Texas looks like it could be in play as a swing state in 2020, driven by this. Because a lot of Latinos, and particularly young Latinos, are like getting up to vote. So that's really good. And of course, like I said, 579 of us in that group were all becoming citizens, and I'm sure a good chunk of us are also planning on voting. I've already gone and gotten my updated driver's license, and I clicked the vote registration option on there. I should be getting that in the mail. And the judge basically, he makes a speech, an official ruling that we're all citizens now, and everybody claps, and it's great. I received a certificate that has the photograph from my last green card renewal is on it, along with my new legal name and is a citizen, you know, this date, this location, etc. So I keep that in a real fucking safe place. As soon as I got that and the court order with my name change on it, as soon as I got those home, I immediately scanned them and saved them on my computer. You know, I'll make extra copies just in case anyone needs a copy for that, because I have to like fax it to my bank and stuff like, or well, I email or upload it to some of my banks. I've actually made myself a to-do list on Trello of here are all the places that I've told about my name change, and here are the ones that I still have to do. It'll take a while. And you know, to be clear, you know, you don't have to change your name if you become a citizen. It's something I wanted to do for personal reasons, because I've always hated my old last name. This is just the last name of my mother's second husband, who made all of our lives miserable for 19 years and then fucking divorced her. Alcoholic, real dirtbag. And I was like, you know, my actual birth name was my birth father's last name. He was a shitbag as well. The stepfather was a shitbag. So I was like, fuck it, and took my old family name back.
Your mom's name.
Yeah. Cool. And I also partially did that in honor of my grandfather, my maternal grandfather. Because honestly, he was the only positive male role model I had in the family as a child. Like, when I was a young kid, like, he would spend time with me and playing with me. And, like, I have this – one of my favorite pictures of my grandfather is him sitting on the sofa, and he is very studiously applying – little decals to a little toy car. You know, it's just one of those little things you get when you're a little kid for Christmas or whatever. And like, it's just it's a really sweet picture. And I always remember that one. I should ask my sister for a copy of it, because I think she has some of the old family photos from our time in Scotland. And I really liked him. He was a good guy. So I'm very happy about that. Also, what really aggravated me in the last few years is, you know, like most places, work does last name first on email, and that's how it shows up on Skype and stuff like that. So a few times people would address me by my last name, and I'd be like, that's not my fucking name. Read it, you know?
I mean, to be fair.
I mean, yeah. But it just started to really get under my skin over time. So then when the whole the citizenship thing came up and I could do a name change included in that for no additional cost, I was like, I'm going to fucking do this. I'm going to like sort of not really reinvent myself, but just sort of like take back an aspect of myself, I guess, and be like, this is who I am. I'm completely disconnected from this person I share a last name with.
And you connect, and this isn't like something new. You had kicked around this idea years ago about wanting to change your last name.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not new.
This did not come out of left field. To answer the obvious questions, I did not change my name to Fuzzwolf. I maintained my regular first name because my mom gave me that, and I like it, and it suits me. I did make my middle name Wolf, which is not for lol furry kind of reasons. I've been thinking about this a bit lately, where I was like, I've always had an interest in wolves. Like, I first remember this around the age of 11, just being interested in wolves and werewolves. And then getting really into wolf conservation in my 20s. I wrote papers in college about it. I donated to a wolf sanctuary, and it had a thing where you could like adopt a wolf, so I did that for a few years. So like, they've always sort of been, it's been an important animal to me. And like, I've just always seen a lot in wolves that I admire. So that's more why I did that, you know. And yes, I'm a wolf on the internet, you know. But it's also, it's like, it's a real name. I mean, there's Wolf Blitzer, and it's a very common last name of various spellings, so it's not really that weird. Tira just kind of shakes his head, though, and calls me a fucking furry, which, to be fair, I am.
I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But but it was sort of like, I want to keep my mom's last name. I wanted the first name my mom gave me, my grandfather's last name. And I was like, the middle name, I was like, that's something for myself. That's something I'll pick something that is special to me. And it was honestly either that or like Gallifrey. And I was like,
I'm sure Tyrion would shake his head just as much as that one.
Is that a Gaelic word? What does that mean? Yeah, he'd kill me. Like, if I made my middle name Tardis, and it had to be in all caps on all the paperwork and stuff like that.
Blank time relative dimension in space surname.
Yeah.
That would make your ID, like, extra thick. your ID would just be extremely long.
Why does your name take up three lines on your passport? Yeah, it's sort of like when you have to write drama all the way out on the checks.
Yeah, and we don't have to do that anymore.
You don't have to do that anymore, but that was always amusing. Whenever we got a check from drama to pay our printer, it was like it always
try
sort
to
of
fit ran, it all in and
ran off the edge there. It was pretty funny. But yeah, it was, and you know, they had the whole one part that amused me. So like, right after everyone does they name all the countries and we all stand up, and I'm like, okay, so you know, now everyone knows who the British people are in the room, right? And then the judge is talking a little bit about American history and about how America overthrew the tyranny of Great Britain, and you know, and I just sort of sink down in my seat. I'm like, oh God. And he specifically calls out England, and I was like, oh man, I wish I could be like, I'm Scottish. I'm not one of the bad ones. But we're all lumped into the United Kingdom. You know, maybe that'll change in a couple of years. Maybe it won't. Lots going on in UK politics right now. But yeah, I had that sort of moment of, geez, facepalm kind of thing, you know? But yeah, no, it was a good time. It was also quite uplifting in ways, because I'm not really a big, rah, patriotism kind of person.
Especially not right now.
But when the judge was talking and he specifically said, make sure bring your culture with you. Bring your customs with you. America is a melting pot, and we want it to be diverse and made of all these different cultures. And I'm like, fuck, man, that is what they taught me America was all about in like fifth grade social studies. And, you know, for a long time, that's what I truly believed America was all about, you know, but then recently you see like this very anti-immigrant direction that the current administration is going. And it's like, you know, yeah, in the last 15 years or so, I've really been like, America doesn't really live up to its ideals. But, you know, here was a judge for this federal district that was saying this. And I'm like, yeah, and we're registering to vote. Maybe we can still make a difference. Maybe we can turn this around, or we can make this a better place. You know, I don't want to say it, but we could make America great, but in the way that in the future that liberals want. You know, where it is a diverse, multicultural country, and everyone respects and loves each other. And like, that's sort of a vision of what I would like to see America become. And it's never truly been that, but that's sort of the hope. And I'd really like to see that become like, not just this fluffy sort of thing that people say, but nobody believes. It would be nice if that was actually like something that could be achievable. And in that moment in the ceremony, I felt that like it was, you know. Now, of course, you know, Then I immediately, like the morning of September 11th rolls around, And Trump makes a very solemn and heartfelt tweet about how the lamestream media is getting his poll numbers wrong and how hated he is and how he's done more than any other president in his first 2.5 years of office. And it's just like,
shut the fuck up, Boomer.
You fucking just, wow. What a way to start 9/11, you know? I don't really like the whole performative sadness every 9/11. And then never forget, and the flag lapel pins and stuff like that. I think the idea never forget is honestly really keeping us from moving forward. It's just what's keeping us in this eternal war on the concept of terrorism. So I'm not all, you know, like, oh my God, you have to make this big statement. But honestly, I mean, he's a fucking president, you know? And previous presidents have actually made a deal of it and made like a very thoughtful tweet or statement on that day. And mm-hmm. here he is, just out there, just being a fucking shithead.
Being like, a little bitch about poll numbers.
Yeah. So sorry, this my little discussion here has ranged from America the Great to fuck Trump, what are you doing to our country? And now I can say that. Now I can say our country, because I don't just live here. Now I'm a part of all this, and I want to make a fucking difference. So you two, Tyrion and Ajax, we're all going to get dragged out of bed at 7 o'clock in the morning and go stand in line at the polls together.
Okay.
We'll make it a big day trip or something. You know? We'll have our little liberal socialist faction there to vote for Elizabeth Warren.
Sure.
Which is who? I won't say names because I don't know if they want it known. But this was very sweet. A friend of mine, his parents, who I've only met like a couple of times, but they really like me and Taryn, were like really happy for me, and they wanted to get me a gift for my immigration. And I was like, honestly, just make a donation in my name to Elizabeth Warren's campaign, because that's like the best thing you could do for me right now. And they replied that I had good taste in candidates. So
well, there you go.
Our whole household is a Warren household right now. So yeah, hopefully she doesn't literally explode or anything.
Yeah.
Before the primary.
It's debate night in America. So Biden can start, you know, bleeding out of every orifice. We don't even know. Cause I mean the last thing he had that eye blood vessel pop in his eye that was all gross. Like
I saw a brief mention of that, but I didn't know the details of it.
Just high blood pressure causes that to happen sometimes in old people, and it happened, and it looked really grody. But it wasn't like he suddenly started spurting blood from his eye, but there were plenty of people making, it turns out he is a lizard person, but he's a horny toad. Blood spurts from his eye, you know.
Where was he? Was he like on a campaign stop?
Yeah. Or something? He might just turn into a puddle of goo on the stage. Who fucking knows?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be like the person that gets devolved by... It was like a human that got hit by a deep mutant powering thing in X-Men. It doesn't matter. Anyways, I'll just cut that out.
Oh, no, don't. I know what you mean. It was an X-Men, I think, 2, where the Senator Kelly got injected with mutant X gene, and he turned into like a watery type creature, but his DNA actually, and I remember this because we literally talked about this like maybe 50 episodes ago, like in another reference to the same fucking movie, but his DNA started to unravel because it was this weird untested fucking technology, and he just
turned to goo,
turned into water and splattered all over the floor of the X-Men med lab, basically.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, so I didn't just...
No, you didn't just make that up or
fever dream form, it.
Fever dream it.
Okay, cool.
Your only fever dream was, wouldn't it be fucked up if it happened to Biden?
Yeah.
It's like, honestly, I'd rather it happen to Trump, but, you know.
Yeah, why not both?
Right, yeah.
So... Shifting topics slightly, well, let's talk about some furry cons real quick.
Okay.
So we've got two furry cons in the news this week. We've got Anthro New England, and we have Indie Fur Con.
Yep.
And both of them are actually for relatively positive reasons, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
Anthro New England is obviously up in Boston in that area, and they're current charity is Vesta Dog, which basically buys ballistic vests for canine cops.
Right. Specifically for underfunded police departments that can't afford the body armor for their dogs. Sort of like how soldiers in Iraq couldn't afford their own body armor, so people were doing GoFundMe to buy the soldiers' body armor. Which really pissed me off, because if you're going to send a fucking soldier to war, the least you could do is give them something to stop them from being shot.
Yeah.
But anyway, so people were like, oh, the Boston PD doesn't need that kind of money. It's like, well, it's not going to the Boston PD. It's going to, like, underfunded small towns that sometimes don't have, you know, the resources. But there is also a long history of police dogs being utilized as weapons against minorities and protesters.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they literally turn them into living weapons.
Yeah. It's not always the things you see on the news of them, oh, they're going to the cadaver finding dogs or stuff like that. I was going to say even like the drug sniffing dogs, but you know, the whole war on drugs is another massive clusterfuck. This podcast brought to you by Coke Zero. That cool, refreshing sound you heard was Coke Zero being opened.
But the reason that they're in the news about Vesta Dog and whatever is that the quote-unquote straight pride parade in Boston had the Boston PD go ham on counter-protesters. And there were furries in the crowd as well. And so people are calling on Anthro New England to change their charity.
Yeah, to not support a police-related
charity.
Don't support
the cops.
Yeah.
And A&E has said that they are going to make a decision, and it will be coming out on the 14th. So by the time this episode goes live, their press release and their statement will have – their decision will have been made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's plenty of other charities that are a lot easier to swallow in terms of what they do.
I mean – if you could still even support organizations for working dogs, like, it takes a shitload of time, effort, and money to train a good seeing eye dog.
Yeah.
You know? Or any kind of dog therapy that dog. Helps people, or therapy dogs and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Maybe not the charity that supports animals that have been turned into weapons of war.
Unfortunately, with all the fucking shootings we get, the therapy dogs could probably use the bulletproof vests as well.
I mean, they could also switch it if they want to still do that. They could do police horses. They're not commonly, they're usually just walking around. They don't have the same weapon.
Led after then trample people to death.
No, and usually police horses, there's a statistics where if there's like an unruly crowd, like mounted police, just visibly people are calmer and they calm their tits around them. So they actually have a very calming effect on crowds because it's a big animal.
Maybe because the cop is also so much higher in the air.
They actually theorize that it's a large animal. People are more cautious around them. Right. So it just kind of, everybody keeps their tits a little calmer around them. But they're not sicked on people in the same way. They're not trained in any sort of...
Jesus, now I want to see a fucking attack horse.
I mean, there used to be war horses, but usually police horses are not trained offensively. Usually they're for crowds and, you know, visibility.
Yeah.
So but they all have rounded off herbivore teeth, so you have to get them implants that have points.
Yeah, give them the horrible horse fangs. I think the
hooves are quite plentiful.
Fair enough.
Their damage.
Yeah, they can step on you.
I was just like,
you.
If you want to teach a horse to maul somebody, you're going to have to get them those teeth that they give the military dogs.
After having been kicked by a half-grown yearling, they're just fine without pointy teeth. They hurt like fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one thing. We'll be finding that out soon. The other thing, Indie Furcon actually put out a really kind of heartfelt apology letter, like literally this afternoon when we were recording on the 12th. So Fuzz, you read it.
I did too.
And I read it as well. It's basically this really big mea culpa and apology, which is really good to hear. Like, they made a real ass of themselves earlier in the year and caused themselves a lot of professional harm. Actually, you and Pepper Coyote talked about it a little bit on the episode that you and him and Fox were on.
Right.
And how that was a mess. And they actually put out a statement today. It's a 4-page long Google Doc. like, has the letterhead and everything. And it's this full-on mea culpa apology, and they're like, hey, we're going to try to do better. And honestly, that's the kind of shit I'd like to see after a con makes an ass out of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of it went into there was miscommunication. Like, the board of directors were engaged and working on it, but they didn't communicate that downwards.
Yeah.
So like, it sounds like they were already on the right track. They just failed to handle the PR.
NPR, yeah.
Yeah, communicate that to anyone else but themselves.
Yeah.
And
so
the thing they said that they fucked up was that they, like, Boozy was in communication with the board of directors, and he and Xander had both written them a long letter explaining their reasons for pulling out of appearing at the con. And the board did not share those letters with the staff. So a lot of the staff members just heard, these people are pulling out to the con for quote unquote reasons, and then they went into attack mode as if they just took a shit on the con and said it's a terrible con, rather than actually having like logical thought out reasons. And if they'd shared those letters with the staff at large, it might have gone a long way to like mitigating some of that within their own organization, which they acknowledge that was a misstep on their part, and that's something. So more communication, more. They're also implementing a staff code of conduct, because if you put someone on your staff and people know they're on your staff, and then just not naming names or anything in particular, just a staff member says and does really fucked up shit or becomes a major problem point, they want to be able to be like, hey, you signed this code of conduct that says you weren't going to be an asshole. And honestly, it's like any organization. If someone is like, I work at McDonald's and I'm a Nazi, the McDonald's is going to be like, hey, you're not working at McDonald's anymore. And that's totally within their right to do that. And it's within IFC's right to have that level of control and expectation of conduct for the people working for them.
Because TFF, we've had a staff code of conduct since, I think, year 3 when we got beyond 12 staff members. But we've had a staff code of conduct for a very long time.
That's a good point, that it's like definitely something that as your organization grows to a point. Because in the early days, we had like 12 staff members. We all knew each other pretty well, kind of knew where everybody stood, kind of expected that no one was going to be a massive dick. We weren't always right, but
and we're also all tied into like the promotion and very aware of.
Yeah, but when it's a very small organization, you have very different worries than once you start topping 2,000-4,000 attendees and you start getting like, what is it, 120, 150 TFF staff members? Or
I think we're slated to go over 200 this year.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm getting some more people in my department, maybe.
So how the fuck is
finding them?
So how the hell is any one member of staff, even a lead or an exec, expected to know all of those people? And all of those people you're going to have a diversity of opinions, and you're going to have some conservatives on there. And whether they're a conservative that's kind of middle of the road and not like a out and out fascist, that's fine. Don't talk politics, but when it gets to that degree. But if you've got a staffer that is like literally a fucking Nazi, that needs to be addressed. And that's something that, that not everyone is going to know right off the bat when somebody in a department you're not involved in at all hires somebody. The con chair, the buck eventually always stops at the chair's door, but they need that something in there, some levels of oversight.
Well, when we recently went through and started looking at the next chair siesta, we sat down with the candidates and we had a long talk about everything, whether you directly affected or not. It's going to be your fault, because the buck will eventually, trouble in this case rolls uphill. And at the end, you are ultimately responsible for anything that goes wrong and all the good. But in the end, you're going to be the one on the hook for negative PR, for people doing this. So that's something that we already had to have a talk recently when we were going through our selection for siesta.
Yep.
Yep.
Like, it was a full-on interview. It was, like, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, I think this is a really good sign from IFC. Mm-hmm. And, like, at their opening ceremonies, Fuzz, you pulled up this video that's basically them saying, hey, you know, I'm this person, I'm head of blah, I'm gay, straight, pan, whatever. And at the end, the con chair was like, look, you know, once this space be a good space for everybody, we don't tolerate bullying, etc. Yeah. And that's a positive thing, because they had a whole bunch of negative PR right before their con. So hopefully between that, I hope their con went smoothly, and this statement from the IFC board of directors, etc., that they are heading back on the right track. Because
I think that they would have been showing that they're heading on right track a lot sooner if they shared half of what they say that they were discussing.
Right.
Yeah. And they could have avoided a lot of heartache if they had just been a little bit better at communication.
So again, I really hope that this continues, that they continue on the right track, and that they can avoid further missteps like they did for 2019.
Yep.
Or 2020.
I mean,
well, they screwed up in 2019, and they're going into 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
So the next thing, so we actually had two cool stories that like this, because we're getting into the Halloween season where we're finding cool shit about skeletons. So here this week, there was an article that came out that there was this famous ass Viking funeral pile that they found.
Yes.
And this Viking warrior had, like, two horses sacrificed in their honor. They had weaponry, they had game pieces, they had jewelry and prizes and stuff that they'd done. And it was long held up as this paragon of masculinity. This person was the height of a Viking warrior, and he, was supposed to be the paragon of Viking virtue. Well, it turns out this paragon of Viking virtue was a woman.
I mean, could they tell that right away from the skeleton? Like, the hip bones are shaped.
Because the skeleton was kind of smashed up.
Oh.
So it took a while to basically put it together, recreate it enough to be able to actually.
Or was it a DNA check?
It was a DNA check.
Oh, it was a DNA check. Oh, okay.
Because they'd never bothered to do that, but someone was like, well, why don't we just double check this? Because, yeah, the skeleton was in a mound. It had been crushed by time, and it wasn't like someone came in and smashed the skeleton up with a hammer. It was a really old skeleton that was buried without a coffin. So they finally go in, do two different DNA checks, and they go, oh, this Viking warrior king was in fact Viking warrior queen.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone goes, cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically the extent of the story where
everyone went cool?
No.
Okay.
Okay, the people that really matter go, okay, cool. But there are going to be people that are mad about it, that, no, you're rewriting history with your science and facts, you scary ghosts. The other thing, and this is came out today, is gay skeleton boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
So the famous lovers of Modena skeletons that were buried holding hands were both men. These famous skeletons that everyone was like, oh, they must have been such friends or brothers or poets or comrades. And everyone's just like, yo, people are gay, Karen.
Yeah.
And, you know, the headline is, researchers believe pair might have been siblings, cousins, or soldiers who died together. And the tweet is, I have another thought. We have so many instances of famous authors and writers and people that have written stuff about them. And they're like, oh, that she was just extremely close friends with this other woman. And they wrote all these articles and they're just best friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Lyra and Bon Bon were just best friends for the whole series.
Yeah, they totally weren't lesbian horses. Except, oh wait, no, Lyra proposed, and then Bon Bon was like, surprise, bitch, I have a ring too. And they have a gay horse wedding. I feel so very vindicated that it's definitely 100% confirmed in the show. Lyra and Bon Bon get gay horse married in the finale of My Little Pony French's Magic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also heavily implied that Applejack and Rainbow Dash are gay horse married too, because like when they enter their scene, they're bickering about the splitting up chores at their house. I mean, it was already like super gay horse, because when they did like the Lyra and Bon Bon kids storybook where they live at the same house and they're spending Valentine's to get together eating, drinking hot cocoa on their couch.
Mm-hmm.
They're just best friends.
I like some of the responses. Friends. to the tweet about the skeletons are like, oh, they were just bros, right? They were friends. Bro, shall we be married together? Sure, bro. And holding hands, it shall be done. And there was somebody else that had a really amusing...
They were roommates.
...take on it. Where it was like, oh, they were... One was showing the other how to, like, go kayaking or something like that. And they fell into the grave holding hands or... Yeah, like there's the obvious thing. Like, it reminds me of the photograph of two women in bridal gowns. And the first reply to it was something like, oh, how sweet to get married on the same day as your best friend. And someone pointing out they were getting married to each other. So I guess in theory they were getting married on the same day as their best friend. Because your spouse should be your best friend.
But it's just like, wait, people in the past could be gay?
The straights don't even... consider what is the most obvious thing sometimes. Yeah. They're like, we're just such a non-thought to some people.
A quote in the article, many tombs have been found in the past, but in all cases there was a man and a woman. What might have been the bond between these two individuals in the burial in Modena remains a mystery. let's do a big think about that.
What a mysterious mystery. How will we ever solve this? Oh, so here's someone, Johnny Baker tweeted, could they have been crossing a busy dual carriageway, perhaps? Or about to excitedly jump into a local swimming pool? Maybe one of them was just learning to ice skate. These seem the most likely explanations. And I think I'd replied, like, these all seem way better researched than the actual article.
Yeah, it's like the idea that people have been gay forever just doesn't, they don't get it, like...
Yeah.
No, people have been gay forever and ever. The gays were not created out of whole cloth in 1969.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There have been the gays forever.
It's sort of the same thing with the trans. How there's all these think pieces about the rising trend of being trans and gender nonconforming as if this just suddenly, this is such a millennial thing, right? This just suddenly happened with this generation and younger. Like, oh my God, why is this on the rise? Are people catching trans at school? And it's like, no, it's just that people are they have access to more information now and are feeling more comfortable coming out than they used to be.
And ways to find people. And the community.
Right.
You know, if you're like if you're in like a small town and you know that you're a little weird, you know, and maybe this isn't your thing, but now you can be someone in a small town, reach out to the internet and discover, oh, hey, there's other people like me. This isn't just a thing of mine where I'm abnormal. You know, you get more communication. You can form bonds with people more distantly. It's kind of like furry in ways, like, or gay in others.
Yeah.
You know, you
find other people you have a thing in common with that you thought was something wrong with you or something. And then you realize, no, this is something that literally millions of people are going through and have questioned about themselves. And, you know, now you can talk to each other and form a gay straight alliance in your school and things like that.
Yeah, I mean,
if you want a fucking real deep cut, and this was something that I saw pointed out elsewhere, look up the priesthood of Cybele in the ancient Roman times, which basically had men dressed in women, emasculate themselves and be as women in the Roman court, dating back to, you know, 47 BC or so before that. So, I mean, there's always been stuff like that. It's just now we're in the modern time.
Yeah, just because you didn't know about it doesn't mean it didn't exist.
You also another had thing, to keep your head down a lot more before.
Yeah.
Well, now it's in Western cultures, I mean,
shit. Well, and another thing is there were black Vikings, and that's not widely known. And it is becoming more known as historians are able to figure this shit out more, and those articles get wider spread because of the internet. It's like, just because you're like, no, all the Vikings looked like Chris Hemsworth, right? They all looked like Thor. And it's no. like, no.
There's strong evidence that the Vikings also traded with the Middle East as well. Like, they've found various pieces. They found a couple pieces of Islamic jewelry in a Viking burial mound. That's, like, from the early times, like, Middle Eastern stuff. But it was, like, a golden ring with a stone and the inscription, the word Allah on it.
Yeah.
And some Viking tomb. And I'm like, all right, that's cool as hell. Because that showed that they were very wide-ranging traders.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes the people will get around more than you thought was possible at the time, which is why it is totally true that Jesus made his way to the Americas and buried golden plates in upstate New York, which was discovered by the founder of Mormonism, and that's why Mormonism is real.
Thank you, Fuzz.
You're welcome.
They're up to part three, and they have the five-part Mormonism on Last Podcast on the Left, so learn you some stuff about that if you really are so inclined.
Oh my god.
So
I need to catch up on that, apparently.
Shifting topics somewhat, we're going to shift a little bit to the gamers, as we want to do, because we're already 45 minutes into the show, guys. Mm-hmm. 45 minutes
into the recording. So I know this is like a 90-10 sort of response rate, but is this a good gamer story or a bad gamer story?
This one's funny, and the second one is, the gamers are not okay, but it's also dunking on a website called One Angry Gamer, which is what it says on the tin. So, first one is, gamer's owner booked for stealing consoles from competing store. So, this is in Omaha, Nebraska. The owner of an Omaha and Lincoln gaming store is accused of stealing from a competing business. David Mitchell, 26, is booked on a felony burglary charge on Monday for allegedly conspiring to steal from The Game Room near 72nd and Dodd Street in a handful of incidents in June and July. About $50,000 worth of consoles and expensive games were stolen from the shelves. Former Gamers employee Anthony Rodriguez told police that Mitchell had him steal from The Game Room to sell in their Lincoln store, Gamers. Current Gamers employee Philip Williams was also arrested in the thefts and was reportedly caught on camera using a key to get in because he used to work at the store.
Oh my god.
In August, OPD issued a search warrant for the Gamers Lincoln store seizing four stolen consoles. Mitchell told KMTV, "I had nothing to do with it. Obviously, we think that there's information or evidence that shows otherwise," said Douglas County Attorney Don Klein. "Certainly, we wouldn't file the case unless we felt that there was evidence showing that the allegations were true." A search warrant indicates they searched Mitchell's and Williams' Facebook pages and learned that they were in contact while Williams was inside the game room during a burglary, even sending photos of PlayStation filing cabinets and decorations. So this guy, I had to do a little bit of digging on the background. So in this particular story, the owners of the two stores had been friends, but they split up being friends. And so there was the game room and gamers. And one dude decided, well, the best thing I'm going to do is I'm going to steal product and stock from one store, the store of the dude that's not my friend anymore, and then I'm going to be a massive brain genius and sell it at my store. Because fuck buying my own stock, I'll steal his and then sell it in my store.
Okay, so to be fair, which you always know is in air quotes and leading to a really terrible conclusion when someone says that.
Uh-huh.
To be fair, is a really good way to keep your overhead down.
Yeah, to be fair. I just thought that was a very fun thing. Where it's like, oh no, the gamers. And this is a store named Gamers. That very small interest story that was just like, who would do that? And like, he was on Facebook sending photos to his buddy like, hey, yo, check it out. They got this display for this new game coming out. I'm going to steal it. And then, like, he steals it and it pops up at the other store, and it's like, big think, where did this happen? Where did this come from?
The fact that the owner denied knowing anything about it is sort of like, where did you think all your extra stock was coming from? Like, oh, this pallet of PS4s just sort of appeared in my storeroom.
And $50,000 is actually a good chunk of stuff.
I mean, this isn't Amazon. This isn't... this isn't a fucking football-sized field warehouse. I mean, this isn't something where you could lose a couple hundred Nintendo Switches or something like that. I mean, it just blows my mind what people do when they're clearly caught red-handed. I didn't know about it.
It'd be like if we were at Anthrocon and you just walked over one day, grabbed a box of Sofa Wolf stuff, just shifted it 6 feet to the left onto our side and be like, I have no idea. Check out this new stock we have in.
Yeah, a book that we didn't publish. It's we'll just take Fur Planet logos on a sticker and just slap it over to Sofa Wolf logo.
Wow, I didn't know Fur Planet published Out of Position.
It's like, we do now. No. You know what's funny about that, using that as an example, though?
What?
Is that because we're distributors for them, at the end of this year's AC, we ended up leaving with like four boxes of Sofa Wolf stock.
Yeah.
That they gave us as to distribute, to sell on our website and at cons they don't go to. But it is kind of funny that, some Sofa Wolf boxes did actually migrate over into our pile. But, obviously with their permission.
Yeah. It was like, we don't want to have to mail this stuff out. Shove it in your cars. And they're like, okay. And we did. The other thing that's really funny, it's a funny in a... what kind of way? So Celeste chapter 9 came out this week. It's the final chapter of Celeste. It's a precision platforming game that has some backstory, and you guide...
Was this the one I sent you the screen caps of in the tweet, and I was like, what game is this?
Yes.
Okay.
This particular article, it is very much like shooting a fish in a barrel, because it's this website that's nothing but angry. It's literally called One Angry Gamer, and it's always like the most reactionary bullshit. Like, how dare they reduce Tifa's bust size by making her wear a sports bra? This is the Holocaust type things. Putting a feather skirt around Siren's feather pubes is... violence against me, a white male.
But as you pointed out, the what's her name from Spyro, go pussy out.
Yeah. Allura doesn't have to wear pants, but they put a skirt around Siren. This really says something about us as a society. So Celeste is a precision platformer, but at the very end of the game, it's revealed that, the main character, who's the whole game is a giant metaphor about her overcoming depression and gaining self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Cloaked in a very well-made precision platformer, that the main character, among all the other things, is trans. Okay, cool. That's neat.
And you don't find that out until this latest DLC. Yeah,
it's the last DLC, and it adds some more stages and whatnot. And they're recently giving it away for free on the Epic Game Store, so I have all the DLC for that now. It's cool.
So, like, the images that are in the tweet, was there was, like, one is like a close-up of her desk, and she has a little gay pride flag and a trans pride flag in a coffee cup. And apparently people were trying to be like, maybe she's just an ally. And it's like...
Yes, just like those two guy skeletons holding hands were just buddies.
Right.
So yeah, the I'm going to read the text here that made the person go... What's wrong with the gamers? So, Matt Makes Game Celeste is always suspected of being a game themed around left-wing propaganda, but there was never any definitive proof. Well, the latest expansion makes it clear exactly what kind of politics the game's developers are trying to promote, and it casts all doubts aside. In the latest DLC update for Celeste, there's a short picture sequence that shows the main protagonist, Madeline, at her computer. In the corner just behind the keyboard are there two flags, a gay pride flag and a trans pride flag. Keep in mind that this game for kids, and it's rated E for everyone by the ESRB.
Oh yeah, everyone, including trans people, dumbass.
If you're unable to view the images, you can see an enlarged vision of the image below. What did I tell you all before? Celeste was a gateway that led you down a road towards the destruction of Western civilization.
Holy shit.
So parents, beware. You think your kid is playing a Twitch reflex platformer, but in reality they're playing Communist Brainwashing Simulator 6.9. They'll go into their bedroom saying their prayers and taking their vitamins before booting up Celeste, but after playing the game, they'll come out their room vaping with a Che Guevara shirt and tweeting hashtag I'm with her on their FailPad 7. Just remember that it starts with pixels, but it ends with two soft nuts in a petri dish.
And this isn't, like, being funny or anything. This is, like, a real thing.
This is them being legitimately angry shitheads.
And, but it's hilarious. I mean,
Communist
for all the wrong reasons.
Communist Brainwashing Simulator 6.9. And Celeste is going to turn your kids trans if they can finish all steps.
Tweeting, I'm with her and their failed pets.
They also, apparently, vaping is now bad to them. Like, no real men suck cigarettes, I guess.
I guess they see it as a hipster thing. Because they're totally someone that would be... It sounds like there'd be someone who would be, like, fucking hipsters if they see a guy with a bun or a vape.
Just communist brainwashing simulator.
Trying to talk about banning vaping now.
Yeah, yeah. That could be another topic. Like, Trump is talking about banning flavored tobacco.
I'd say as we suck on our mint-flavored hookah.
And, like, and even the ones that don't have nicotine in it. And it's
flavored sort of, vape juice.
It said something like, was it four people or seven? Six people have died over X number of years due to a vaping-related incident.
Because they bought shitty knockoff made-in-China things with, like, lead in them.
So a lot of people are pointing out, you know, six people die of vaping. Oh, my God, we have to ban vaping. Hundreds of thousands of people die from gun violence over the last 20 years. There's bans don't work. There's nothing we can do. We tried nothing and nothing worked.
One kid died from lawn darts and they were banned. The sheer amount of like low death, oh shit, we gotta ban it, is it's very common that this occurs. But yeah, you're right. And the way that Trump phrased it, that Melania has a son and he's a good young man, like, he doesn't name his own fucking kid. And I can
even say, I have a son.
No.
You know, he's...
And I can pretty much guarantee you that they caught that little fucker vaping. It's like, oh, Barron fucking vaped and that little shit is going to get it ruined for everyone else. And
that was
really,
probably the only joy that poor kid has.
Like, let Barron vape weed. Come on. That kid has, like, the worst fucking family on the goddamn planet. Give him some mercy, please.
Hashtag let Barron vape.
Yes.
Let's get it trending.
Come on, kids. Do it. The other thing, too, is, like, consider the impact on small business owners if that was to go into existence.
Like, oh, I know, right? I mean, they're popping up left and right.
Fucking everywhere. Same with, like, CBD shops.
I was going to say, the only thing that's more prevalent is CBD shops.
And hookah lounges.
Like, okay, the same shopping center that has the Dickies and the Fast and Furious and Duck Donuts and stuff right there on the north side of Beltline and Marsh has two vape shops that are selling CBD. One shopping center. One's next to the Dickies, and the other one's now on the other end next to the Chick-fil-A and the Chipotle. Like, one is specifically CBD, but the other one's a vape shop that's been there for a little bit that has, we also have CBD! Please! Get your shit here!
CBD is now finally legal.
Well, that's good.
Well, because they passed that law about the hemp being legalized.
Yeah.
So anything that is below 3% THC is legal. So if it is properly, professionally prepared CBD oil, then it should by nature be below 3% THC. So, I mean, make sure you check the packaging because I'm sure some slapdash companies probably don't check it all that closely. But if you get good quality, like, I don't know if it's certified or anything like that, CBD oil, you know, then it should be legal in Texas under the law that took effect June 1st.
Yeah. And that's also resulted in a lot of weed arrests just being thrown out because I think we brought this up on our previous episode where basically...
We did. They have to do a test to determine THC count. And anything below 3% is considered hemp and legal. Anything above is considered cannabis and illegal. But there's only one lab in the entire state, apparently.
And it's expensive to test.
Yeah.
And so they're just like, that's not
the technology to do this. So it's somewhere in Harris County. It's somewhere down by Houston. And so you can't expect, like, this small-town police department in some little West Texas town to be like, well, let's send this sample to Houston pay a massive amount of money and, you know, maybe we can get a felony on weed possession. Like, it's just, that's why most local attorneys are just throwing it out and being like, this is not worth the time and money to go after, you know, because they're actually arresting people. And, you know, now they can't, or not that they can't, they most of the time won't. Smoking weed is still a dodgy proposition in Texas. It's still technically illegal, but it is looking like there's a lot less that can actually be levied against you
if yeah, you are caught with it. They're kind of realizing that it costs way more money than it's worth to them. Yeah. Which, I mean, making policing a certain thing more expensive than the police is worth is it's a win. I'll take it. You know, legalize that shit and, handle other things, or just slow the fuck down. You don't have to arrest everybody all the damn time. There was a thing in New York that the New York City Police Union was like, well, we're going to slow down arrests and bullshit after they fired that cop that murdered.
Yeah.
I forget his name.
Eric Garner?
Eric Garner, yeah.
Yeah.
They fired the shithead cop that murdered him. And as a result, violent crime has gone down in the city.
4 fucking years after the guy was killed.
Oh, yeah. It was totally bullshit that he faced no charges.
It only happened because it came up during the Democratic debates. And one of the candidates, was he the mayor of New York or the governor of the state? I don't remember which candidate it was. But they were specifically calling out, fire this bitch. And unfortunately, they started chanting while Cory Booker was speaking, and he's a senator from New Jersey. He has zero fucking power to fire an NYPD officer. So it's a little mistimed, but it did become a fucking issue for this guy. And the next fucking week, what do you know? Dude's fired, you know. 4 years later, when it became politically expedient, for them to do so. But anyway, back to what you were saying, the NYPD, the ones that pissed about it, were like, we're going to slow down policing. And the last time they had a bitch fit like this was a few years ago, where they were like, well, we're going to slow down on stop and frisk. It's like, oh, you mean people of color can walk the streets of New York without being randomly fucking searched? Great. I don't see a problem with this.
And that's pretty much been everybody's response. And, like, as a result, the, like, arrest rate has plummeted through the floor because they're not randomly arresting people for sleeping on a bench or whatever. So, okay, yes, please maintain your fit. It just shows how useless you largely are. So, the last news bit before we get into our two emails this week, because I have a little bit, sort of a shill thing to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of shilling for a game. But the very last thing, and this is probably the semi-final Vic Lasagna update. So, this guy, Vic Magnagna, or Vic Lasagna, I don't know how to say his fucking last name, and I don't care. He's a piece of shit. He decided to sue Funimation and three of his fellow voice actors for defamation starting back in the start of the year. And everybody was like, this is a terrible idea. This will not fly in court. But unfortunately, this was flouted as a way to basically fight back against the concept of the Me Too, of people coming out and naming abusers and saying, all these people are shitheads. But thankfully for us and everybody involved, Texas has very strong slap suit protection. The slap suits are strategic lawsuits against public participation. It's basically a way to counteract rich and powerful people from suing less rich and powerful people for saying things about them that they dislike in real life. In this particular case, he was suing
Funimation,
Jamie Marchi, Monica Rial, and Ron Toy. In Fort Worth for defamation, for libel slander, as they put it, tortuous influence with existing contracts, tortuous influence with prospective business relations, and civil conspiracy and vicarious liability.
Basically saying that since his reputation was trashed, he was losing a job as a voice actor and he would be unable to gain additional employment as a voice actor or additional convention appearance fees in that capacity.
And that did come to pass because he did this. He very publicly sued a former employer, very publicly sued fellow voice actors that are contractors that worked at the same company. And his hearing was Friday after we recorded last week's episode. And it went about as well as everybody on Law Twitter had been saying it would. in resulting in everything against Jamie Marchi being completely thrown out, half of the stuff with Monica Rial and Ron Toy, and 4/5 of the things against Funimation completely thrown out at the gate. Now, because this was a TCPA hearing, the SLAPP, anti-SLAPP law hearing, he is now on the hook for 100% of Jamie Marchi's legal fees, at least 50% of Monica Rial and Ron Toy's lawyer fees and costs, and 80% of Funimation's legal fees and costs. So this extremely ill-advised slander lawsuit against these people has been, well, turned around and slapped against him.
So even if he wins the other 50%, 50%, 20% against the remaining three parties, he's still fucked.
Oh, yeah. So because 100% of Jamie Marchi's stuff, that's six figures, easy, because this has been going on for at least 6 months, and I can guarantee you that they're going to start juicing their billable hours as hard as they can before as this wraps up, because it was thrown out completely, and I think it was done with prejudice that he can't appeal that. And the other thing is, like, with the tortious interference things being thrown out, that means that they have nothing to say that he cost me X amount of money. So the worst he can get is libel / slander or quote unquote civil conspiracy, but you can't prove damages on either of those things. So he can't recoup losses. Basically the court can say, yeah, they slandered you, but it didn't cost you anything. And so he gets nothing. In every universe, he loses 100%, no matter how the court comes out. Like, okay, maybe Monica Rial and Ron Toy have to pay half their lawyer fees. Okay, whatever. But the thing is, he still faces sanctions for every single count that was thrown out under the anti-SLAPP law. So he faces sanctions in addition to the costs, like civil sanctions against him as an individual, the Vic Lasagna, who brought the lawsuit, for all of Jamie's, half Monica, half Ron's, and 80% of Funimation's costs as fines on top of everything he already has to pay. So he literally owned himself to the tune of probably over $1 million for being a creepy, handsy pedo man.
Mm, watch out, you'll get sued.
Nope.
Saying that.
The thing is, the other thing that was really funny, they were trying to argue that he was not a public figure for the purposes of the anti-SLAPP lawsuit being
in place. Wait, what?
They were trying to argue that Vic was not a public figure because he's not well known. But the thing is, the judge was like, this courtroom is packed. You don't have to tell me, you don't have to argue that he is. I can see that he is a public figure because the courtroom for the hearing was completely packed full of people and observers.
Yeah.
And not to mention that this whole thing was about a person that goes to conventions and gets appearance fees and gets money for autographs, and they're trying to argue that he's not something of a public figure.
Literally, that's called a public appearance.
Yeah. I would say that none of us are quote-unquote public figures. Like,
but I don't get paid to go to
We don't show. Get paid to go to cons, you know, but we're also not voice actors who've been working in the industry for 20 years and whatever. Yeah,
I mean, he's not going to be well known outside of like anime circles, but anime is a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Well, see, now he is, which is almost
worse. He's really kind of fucked himself because tell me what you're telling me on the ride over here.
So, in addition, the Dallas Morning News got into writing about this because it's a local interest story.
Yeah,
that because Funimation's based out of Grapevine, which is north of here, and as a result, there was the digital article that was posted. It also was on the front page of the Metro section in the Dallas Morning News one weekend. So it hit the local papers. And then the Friday evening or Saturday morning after the hearing that went so poorly, the Dallas Morning News wrote another article about the thing. And Channel 5, our local news station, had the author of that piece come on the news where they talked about it for 2.5 minutes. So not only is this whole thing known, blown up all over the horrific nightmare that is anime Twitter, people in the local area who read the fucking paper or watch the Channel 5 news, which is a lot of people, now know about this situation.
Yeah.
And
a lot more people know his name now, the than would have just in the anime circle.
Yeah, so it's just like, this is such a galactic self-own. Mm-hmm. It's just, I feel bad for him because he's so dumb. Like, mm-hmm. everyone was like, don't do this, don't do this. And a couple of grifters were like, no, no, you should totally do this.
Yeah.
And nerds donated $250,000 to a GoFundMe to try to fund Vic Kicks Back. And all that money's gone. These people donated their fucking lunch money to basically go to pay these other people's legal fees because the lawyers that did this for fucking grifters, they're idiots. And now they're going to get in trouble. They face sanctions. And Vic himself is never going to get another job voice acting in a major industry. He's never going to get invited to these larger anime cons ever again. Like, I saw a thing where they compiled a list of cons that had disinvited him, mm-hmm. and it was significant.
Yeah.
But hey, there's the Holly Hill Comic Con in Holly Hill, North Carolina, which turns out is a tiny free or low-cost anime con that's held in a dead mall, is inviting him.
Yeah.
And as a result, a number of vendors were already saying, how about no, and you give us our money back, fuck you.
Wow.
So this will hopefully be the last time I need to bring the, or need that I want to bring this up, because it's more or less reached its endgame point. Like, the judge has until the end of the month or so to rule on this finally, to throw it all out or allow the remaining pieces go to trial. Either way, it doesn't much matter, and that will resolve itself fairly quickly after that. And the judge could rule on it any time between now and the first week of October, probably.
You know, another aspect of this, which is amusing to me, is that, like, on at the beginning, on one side, you could be like, oh, this is a really smart grift on the part of a couple of unscrupulous lawyers, right? And they're going to get their money, and they're going to be paid, and they'll be fine, and the only person taking the fall will be Vic. But that's not actually the case. His legal team are also idiots. They're just really bad lawyers. Because I'd seen some reports saying that one of them is under threat of being disbarred. And there was like a whole description of the actions that were happening in the courtroom where the lawyer would be like, do you have proof of that? And the thing you wanted proof of was like a contract with a convention. And like, yeah, a good lawyer would have all that shit filed on their table in an orderly manner to be able to be like, here, judge, here's the contract. But this guy was like fumbling around, rifling through papers, saying he didn't have this right now. And the judge would say something and then be like, do you understand? And apparently the lawyer replied, I wasn't listening. And the judge said, it would help if you do. Like, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an expert. But, I mean, I've seen episodes of Perry Mason, so I'll consider myself an expert for purposes of this discourse. But this guy sounds like a pretty bad fucking lawyer.
Yeah, he did not get his money's worth there.
No, not at all.
Or maybe the lawyer just knows he's got no fucking chance and is just phoning it in.
See, he shouldn't, though. Like, you know, he should have represented his client to the best of his ability, and frankly, that could have been the best of his ability. But if he was truly a really smart con man grifter, he would have made a case that even if it was shit, it sounded plausible. And apparently, that was not what happened at all. So if this lawyer was trying to be a con man, he failed at that.
So that's fun in the watching a train wreck from far away, full of people you don't like.
Mm-hmm. Wait.
Unfortunately, this does still mean that the people named in this, and pretty much anybody that's done voice acting work in stuff with him, is going to be harassed by his rabid fans. And it has resulted in, like, Monica Rial having to, like, reconsider going to certain cons unless she can get guarantees from the cons that they're going to up her security.
And that is such absolute fucking bullshit. That she gets allegedly sexually harassed by this guy, and now, you know, she's the one under threat, you know. And, like, didn't they all have to lock their Twitter at some account at some point because they're all getting harassed? And
several of them have. Like, Ron Toy had locked his Twitter account for a while. And I think it still is because it's just people spewing shit and throwing unrelated claims at him. And he's just like, man, fuck this. Who needs it? And locked his Twitter. And honestly, when it comes to one of these things, it's just lock your Twitter and go do something else for a while. Because it's...
I mean, I would say that as a voice actor, that guy probably has to have a Twitter to maintain a professional presence. But at this point, you log out for a couple of months, log back in, unlock.
You're not getting jobs because you're on Twitter, basically.
Yeah.
You have your own professional network.
Right. And the professional network knows who to hire and who not to hire.
Yeah. Especially nowadays.
Yeah.
All right. So we have now exhausted our topics that we really want to touch on other than PewDiePie is a shit. And, well, we don't need to, at least, you don't really need to go on that further because everybody's talking about it and he really is a shit.
See the Evergreen H Bomber Guy video from like a year and a half ago where he talks about this.
Yeah, PewDiePie is a Nazi. I'll put it in the show notes. So, we get emails occasionally, and this week, or actually last week, we got a couple of really cool emails from a furry indie dev whose game recently finished kickstarting back in late last year, and they happened to contact us and write us a nice little email, gave us some game codes for their thing. So this is kind of a, this is where I'm going to shill for a little bit, because I am 100% in favor of our community making our own video games. That's really cool. And this is one such game, which I think is pretty cool so far. So this one is from Familiar Travels, is the name of the game. Hey there, my name is Balin, and I am the creator of Familiar Travels, a new furry video game. Thought I would reach out to you guys to both tell you a bit about my game and give you some keys, see if you'd like to take a look and get some feedback from me. The furry fandom was a huge inspiration for this game. I tried to set out to do something new hasn't been done in visual novels before by giving people an open world and focusing on character types and personalities that people really see in the fandom. We aren't afraid to talk about issues like mental health, toxic masculinity, issues of self-identity and discovery, and the more complicated nuances of relationships. The candid and straightforward nature of the game is part of the reason I decided to reach out to you. It's also total lefty bait, but you didn't hear it from me, smiley face, which is true so far. The people who play the game really connect with it, and I want more people to take a look and hopefully get the same impact from the game that the game and the community around it have had on me. The people who take the time to create things in the fandom and use their platform for a positive purpose are seriously inspiring and part of the reason why our team works so hard on this to be part of that scene and hopefully use it for something positive. So yeah, reach out if you have any questions. If you do end up mentioning the game, let me know, and I'm eager for feedback. Balin. So it's actually sort of a handwritten promo email, which is always nice to get. Because like I signed back when I was doing YouTube and Twitch streaming a lot more often, I would get stuff from Keymailer and I would get these random ass game offers. And I always felt pretty bad because my reach on YouTube died and Twitch was very hard to grow. But I'm pretty sure that we brought this up way back when we were talking a lot about furry games like Kickstarter. And this was one of them, another one that's coming out, like Something to Do with Love, which is another adult furry VN. But I sat down and played it for like 2.5 hours today, and so far it is really cool. So the furry character design in this one is very much on the big fluffy furries, like more fat fur kind of stuff, but not like specifically everybody's a big fat fur or furry. It's just they draw lots of characters with varying body types, but the artist doing it has a type that she very much prefers. I tweeted a number of things out. Gil Panda is her name, and she has done a wide variety of characters. There's like a badger, there's various wolves and dogs, and there's an elephant lady, but there's also a big lizard dude, a little demon fox. Like, there's a pretty wide selection of characters, and it is a visual novel, so there's a lot of reading involved. But it does have a branching story as well, because like you can go around to the various places and time doesn't necessarily pass until you get to the end of day big like decision sequence. Like, all right, well, at the end of day one, you can choose to go to the speakeasy and meet the other characters, or you can go to bed and sleep on your couch, which seems very lame. Why would you want to do that? And because of that, you get invitations to a couple more things on the next day. And then when you get, you can walk around the city, talk to everybody that's there. And there's a lot of furry characters. It's like something like 20 people's OCs are included as like background characters that have something to say. And because the game is set in this like confluence of like five different worlds that, you know, five different dimensions, people's varying OCs are not super out of place. And one thing I did like about it too is like once you finally reach the end of day, like doing this will end this day. It says, hey, this seems like it'll take a lot of time. Should I continue? And you have to click yes. So if you click yes, it goes through, it plays the scene out. You might have a choice, you might not. And then it goes to the next day. But if you choose no, you can go and walk around and talk to people until you want to go and basically pick what you want to do. It was a lot like that in Night in the Woods. Like, you could faff around the city as long as you wanted to until you decided, oh, I'm going to hang out with Greg or B, or Germ in a couple cases too. Like, so basically you faff around and talk to people until you make the decision that moves the story along to the next day. And like, I'm at the end of day three and I have like three standing invitations to go do something. And it's like, okay, there's the Kitsune guy or the bird girl, the blue jay bird girl, or I think the moth girl wants me to hang out, or maybe it's the demon fox. You know, there's options. So far so good. And yeah, I got given a code for free, so yeah, I am shilling for it. But it's pretty fun, and it's a furry VN that's developed by furries in the furry fandom. It wasn't like this person making a huge amount of money off it either. But it's like a whole $13 on Steam right now, and so far I've been having fun with it. Like, he sent me codes 2 weeks ago, and I hadn't had time to sit down to it until I just literally was like, alright, I have to sit down today and put some time into this to see how I feel about it. It has a really kind of clever intro that I felt kind of like, wait, what about? Because it explains the world that you're playing in, the setting, but it does it under, like, they're showing it in an 8-bit RPG, like original Final Fantasy style. And then another character like interrupts and like, that story is utter bullshit. Why would you even say that? And then it goes into the actual like modern visual novel look of the game. So that's fun. It's called Familiar Travels. I can include a link in the show notes. It's one of those things where it's like, I'm playing through it. It's like, oh, maybe I can stream this. Well, no, apparently it does have sex scenes in it, which means you can't stream that on Twitch if you want to keep your channel. So
I guess you could stream some of it.
You could like maybe put it up on YouTube, but like cut out certain scenes, but then, you know, what's the point? So I don't know. I mean, I'm going to continue playing through the game to see if there actually are like full sex scenes, or if it's like, oh, fade to black. Who knows? Because like Something to Do with Love, the other furry visual novel that has the very like VHS aesthetic that I thought was pretty cool, they had full sex scenes, but like there was a setting where you could like make it so that it was more or less like in the dark or visible. But even then, like visible, it's like sort of low poly looking fucking, but it is still fucking, and you can't show that on Twitch. Anyways, it's cool that there's games being made by furries. There's a bunch of other ones that hopefully I'm talking to folks. I'm trying to make the electronic gaming track at Fiesta 2020 a full-fledged thing, and so like I'm contacting devs and inviting them to come and show off their wares in the game room, which is now downstairs next to the vendor hall, taking up the bottom half of Marsalis A. So I'm doing my damnedest, kids. So the other one is an email we got last week, and I'm gonna pass this one off to you, Fuzz.
Okay.
The one titled
Circling Vultures.
Circling Vultures, yes.
From Anonymous. Okay. This relates to conventions. Hey folks, I have a bad case of the discourse today. A month or two ago, furries, especially a bunch of leftist furries I follow across the social medias, were upset over a fursuiter appearing in a Converse ad in South America. I honestly think there's something a little more harmful and a little closer to home that bears discussion. Furry conventions operating as for-profit ventures. Yes, I know that sci-fi cons and media-based cons of all kinds work this way. It's not new. But in the furry space, there are several unique features that should be taken into account. Furry conventions have historically been, by their nature, built on free labor, from the volunteer gopher to the board of directors. Artists, writers, security, management, you name it. Most people working a con work for free to put on an event for the sake of their community and friends. It's a thankless job at the best of times. We don't have outside media companies we're beholden to. We don't have shareholders for whom we have to maximize profit. My issue then is this. If a convention is being run by volunteers working on donated time, equipment, and art, and the owner of that convention is attempting to profit by it without compensating the people making it possible, what is that called? Why, yes, little Carl, that's exploitation of labor. It's an unnecessary layer of management capital attaching itself at the top of the convention like a head crab from Half-Life, sticking a set of furry ears on itself and saying, "How do you do, fellow furries?" It's my view that no convention, unless its staff, artists, and anyone else performing services are compensated fairly for their labor, should be run as a for-profit event within furry. It's as simple as that. People are so concerned about capitalists ruining the fandom by diluting what we are for the mainstream, but the call is coming from inside the house. I do hasten to add that I am well aware that it is much easier to form an LLC than it is to form a 501c7 or C3, so I understand why, in the initial stages, a small startup con might do so. But the intent, in my experience, has typically been to operate like a nonprofit and often eventually move in the direction of becoming one. Those aren't the folks I'm talking about. I'm talking specifically about a wannabe capitalist class who produces no value and reaps any rewards of free labor granted out of the love of community, whose finances aren't open to scrutiny, and who hides behind the veneer of being charitable, quote, like any other con. I would be shocked if for-profit cons to this point had turned much of a profit. I know what it takes to run an event, but the principle remains the same. Maybe I'm wrong, and this is just another tempest in a teacup. But when it comes to furry as a community, fandom, whatever you want to call it, I think this is where we'll get eaten by capitalism, not a sneaker ad from Brazil. Thanks for all the words y'all put in my ears every week. It's nice to have you folks out there. With love, Anonymous.
Yeah, you're right, because if you're trying to make a living off these cons, which are exploiting people's volunteered labor, I mean, you are literally setting yourself up for some potentially large lawsuits because you are literally profiting off volunteer labor like that. Like, I'm certainly not up on the law, but it does seem very dodgy that you're getting all this volunteer time and effort, but, like, one person at the top making money. And, like, that was actually a big concern of mine back with doing Nightmare Nights. Like, when people asked us about our finances, we did try to be very transparent about it. Like, we obviously couldn't tell people, like, what we were paying appearance fee-wise. We could say, hey, this is how much we spent on appearance fees overall. And that was generally, like, a third of our fucking budget. And, like, the hotel was another further, like, 11 or 12 grand. And then, like, we would be really forthright. It's like, what's left over? Well, one year it was $500. Our final year had a couple grand left over, but then that never got paid out and just kind of went to the ether after he made that final big payment and donation to St. Jude. So, like, even though in theory the con was quote-unquote for profit, I never made any money. Like, I always put in my own money and I lost money. And, like, I didn't even get my quote-unquote share from the last year. So, fuck that noise.
I think I'm in the minority that I don't see a problem with for-profit furry cons.
If you can pay your people that are spending the time and effort to do it, sure.
No, I mean, like, there's one or two dudes at the top that get paid and nobody else does. With the caveat that that's that person's full-time job. I could see that being, like, if I was doing TFF. And I was spent every day doing the lion's share of, like, I'm the one that's in registration all day tweaking it. I'm running the social media. I would see that this person would replace a huge amount of the day-to-day logistic backbone from taxes to all the money management that has to go on and going to the bank and paying. But that person would have to take on, like, all the jobs that the execs do most of the rest of the year. They would have to be the backbone of the convention. Because just looking at something the size of TFF, which is 5,000 people, if we had one or two paid individuals, and I'm not saying, like, they walk out with 100 grand a year, but a moderate salary, and they offloaded a lot of the work that people do for free. So I'm saying that they are actually doing day-to-day work to make all the little wheels and cogs, because right now all of us try to squeeze it in amongst our day job. So I don't see, when you start getting up to Comic-Con size, that's when I would see a problem with, like, you start saving that much money at the end of each event, and that's a lot bigger. But something like a small furry con, say TFF size, and you're getting paid like 40, 45 grand a year, which is and assuming that you're doing all the work, I don't really see a problem with one person getting paid to do that. And then as long as they're doing the work and not just doing what we do, where you touch in a couple times a day, you answer a couple emails, but you still have a registration lead that's like Storm who's doing all that work. And you still have all the social media team. And everybody is still doing the amount of work that we do today. And one dude just sucks up profit. I would have a big problem with that.
Yeah, that's a very different situation. I mean,
yeah,
but also this particular, the group that even brought this about is doing multiple cons in multiple areas.
I know. And, you know, and if like, if you're doing like the central hub of that and you're doing that kind of work for multiple cities, so long as you're actually taking the places. It better be
a full-time job.
That's what I'm saying.
If it's your full-time job, that's...
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's like, if it's a full-time job, like you are constantly like, say you've got three shows or however many years, and this quarter you're up ramping that, and you're also, you know, doing the club taxes from this one and researching new venues. But I don't want, like you said, if we use our current model, no one should get paid. No one should get, like, get the laurels of the profits from a con. No. But if we change the model and you really made that your full-time gig, I don't really see an issue with it.
It would be like having a job as an event planner, which is a very large industry and a legitimate career.
And that was what I was kind of looking at it as. You're doing more of the event planning and you're doing kind of everything that goes along with it. You may offload some of it because you just can't be in two places at once, but you're still doing most of the heavy lifting yourself.
But in that case, though, I could see like a con staff coming together and make a decision that we are hiring this person. I mean, even TFF is a nonprofit corporation, could hire someone to be an event planner and be like, you are handling all of these logistics for us.
I agree 100%.
But that's really different, I think, from someone that's just, that has con chairs running cons and doing all the work that con chairs and con staffs normally do.
And I agree 100%.
And they're just getting money for owning the IP, I guess.
See, I got a problem with that, but I don't have a problem with someone getting paid to run a con because a lot of fucking work goes into it. I mean, we know that. We've done it. And the closer to TFF we get, the more of a second full-time job it becomes. Mm-hmm. In the three and a half months that leave up to con, I go to work, I come home, and I work on Fiesta stuff. And I'm working on Fiesta stuff at work, too, you know, when I really shouldn't be. I squeeze it in when I've got a moment, when I can walk away from my desk, when I can stealthily check my phone and answer a question.
If Shiva's coworkers are listening to this, ignore that last part.
No, none of them do. Maybe one, but I don't think you found the podcast. There's only one that knows I'm even remotely a furry.
But one of your mates works there, so I guess it's someone other than that.
Yeah, he doesn't count.
I'll say it's definitely, to me, it's definitely not a black or white issue. It's not a all for profit bad, all not for profit good. There's definitely shades of gray in there, and it really depends on how you set up your organization. Because I've known of a con that formed an LLC, and they actually included the owner of the charity they were supporting on their LLC board, and it was just hella simpler to organize it that way. But they were keeping everything above board. There are very different situations when somebody predatory gets it in their mind and decides that they're going to be basically a Comic-Con corporation.
And the ones that are, then they, and like we said, this particular organization we're discussing starts up little cons and tries to edge out existing ones. And that's also predatory, you know, style.
We've spent so much time on it, we have very strong opinions, and we appreciate people writing in to share theirs with us. And we can now tell you how you can do this yourself. you email us at southpawscast.
Oh, I thought you meant I could start a con.
Well, Seven's already done that.
Yeah. southpawscast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at southpawscast. You can find us on Patreon, southpawscast, because we are reaching the end of the show. It's now an hour 37 on the raw recording, so we have gone long, but we are full of opinions. So that's how this show is.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on Twitter at Saverin Drake. Find me on Twitch at Saverin. Saverin, it's now stood online on Mastodon.
You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf. You can find my quote-unquote for-profit furry business at furplanet.com for printed publications, or baddogbooks.com for ebooks. We also have Twitter accounts for both of those sites. You can also go to fuzzwolf.com, and I have a bunch of links there for where to find me. You know, I have some of my old stories and art I commission and stuff like that on my FA profile. And, you know, if you're into the stuff I'm into, you may enjoy some of that.
Oh, yeah. I need to remember to post some new art I got. I got my badge from Moth Monarch, my Rafa Red Mage badge from them. And I also, you and I both went in on a YCH that's going to be hot as hell when that comes out.
Yep. Acello linked this YCH and was like, this is a really good looking YCH. And I was like, huh. Well, I know the kind of stuff that he draws that I like, so maybe I'll like this. So I clicked it. It was pretty hot. It had two characters in it, and I was like, hey, Saverin, do you want to do this with me? Because I think our characters would both kind of fit into this. So it'll be hot and cute, and so look forward to that at some point, whenever that's done.
Acello does such good work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a really cute one that was like Acello with some shiny Pokemons. It was really cute that they did recently.
What are all like walking together?
Yeah, it's that Acello one? With like Sylveon, like shiny Sylveon, shiny Arcanine, and one other one.
Mm-hmm.
I made sure to fave that. So that's cool. Very fun stuff. So, and Shiva, you're not on social media. Yay!
Mm. Okay. You can find Shiva where the Chatcats roam and the Herms are horny all day.
So, Telegram. And I do have an FA, though I haven't uploaded any art I've gotten in a very long time. I really should.
I was very happy to have gotten that badge. Because, I mean, I saw Moth Monarch was the artist that did all the FA. They did the cover to the main con book. They did the big banner. Well, I mean, it was the cover of the comic book that was done onto the big banner that was hanging on the walkway going into the convention center, Anthrocon.
Right.
So, like, that's their art style, but they also had done a Final Fantasy XIV Gunbreaker character badge. They drew someone's OC in the rather elaborate Gunbreaker level 80 armor set, and I was like, holy shit, you do Final Fantasy armor, and it's so complex and bullshit. Will you draw this character in the Red Mage level 70 up? They were like, yeah, and
so
there we go.
So you commissioned her.
I commissioned them, and I got it yesterday, and I'm extremely happy with it. So that's fun. I need to post it to FA.
Did you post it in the fan chat?
Yeah, okay. And on Twitter and elsewhere, and it got a lot. It got more traction on Mastodon than it did on Twitter, and I'm like, y'all suck. Why didn't you like this? It's really good. Anyways, so that's going to wrap it up for this week. So on that note, good night.
And big books.